Good morning. Well, afternoon, I suppose it is at this point. It is my pleasure to be here with you. And before we get into this, if I could just take a couple minutes to pray. Hi, Wayne, by the way. I didn't see you come in before. Lord, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here and reflect your will, your wisdom, and your glory in a way that other people can hear and be connected to you in a way that can understand your plan for the universe and our individual lives. We pray you would bless this time together and that we would be impacted not by me or others in the room, but impacted by you in a way that we can live transformational lives in our circle of influence. We pray all of this in your Son and our Savior's name, Jesus Christ. Amen. All right, thanks. Well, I'm enjoying being here. I feel like I need to walk out a little bit, so I'll come back and forth. But I enjoy being here, and just a little bit of a start of my life to give you a little bit of insight into why transformation is so important to me. My life started with a 20-year-old woman who got pregnant outside of wedlock, ran away from home 100 miles because her mother and father were not going to accept that she was pregnant. The only person in the world that knew that she was pregnant was her uncle, who offered to pay for the termination. She chose not to. I'm convinced that's the beginning of my journey before I was born. So after that, I went into foster care, and I'll tell you the rest of a story on another day, but adopted into a family that was very wonderful, lived in poverty most of my life, and then, as Trey said, to get to the point that you're able to have influence over organizations of 19,000 people and $2 billion in revenue is a journey that I could take the rest of the day to tell you, and I'll save that for another day. But there's transformation that occurred on that journey. I am convinced that transformation itself, for a personal transformation, has lots of corollaries to the business world. And with the organizations that I've been with, to be able to extend that transformation into an organizational transformation, to shift a company from spot A to B, from a commodity to a premium product, from this space to that space, from one owner to another, it requires a thought-out plan. And I just extended what had happened in my life. So that's where we're going to start. You do not see this warning on the screen. I see. Good, good. Okay, so transformation. We exist in an environment right now where we have a lot of disruption. We have all sorts of disruption, and that's why it won't advance, because we have to get rid of this error. So excuse me one second. Okay, let's see if it'll advance now. There we go. We have a lot of disruption. We have disruptive technology. There's an organization that I'm working with right now. Their entire business environment has changed. It's been disrupted. We hear the stories of Amazon disrupting retail significantly. Well, that's not the only space disruption is occurring. It can be in your world. It can be in your personal world. There are people right now that I know, they've just received the news that they have cancer. That disrupts life. News that the business does not have the funding. That disrupts the organization's life. What disruption do you have in your organizations? What else? Competition. There's constant competition. My daughter right now, she is 26 years old, and she is in the midst of trying to make a career change, a career decision. And there is competition for her. There is ways of the world and the approach that you should take as you navigate this transition in your life that, I mean, I'm her dad, so I'm biased, but I think they're just wrong. And they're competing with what I believe is wisdom from someone that cares for her and has her best interest at heart. And there's the same competition for our businesses, folks. The same competition. What else? Political climate. I know you think the political climate is not disruptive now and we're in a time of peace, right? So it's significant. And we also have noise disruption. What else do we have? Economic climate. We've just been able to come out of the recession. And while it seems like it was just yesterday, it's almost 10 years ago that started. And it was a significant disruption for many families, even retirees. So personal disruption and also corporate disruption. Cultural turmoil, there's a lot of influences. I spend some time talking about the millennial generation sometimes, and they are in the midst of cultural turmoil with what social media is doing and their ability to be able to have influence on society. We could spend a lot of time on just the cultural turmoil that's impacting our families and our companies. And then there's the tyranny of the urgent. We don't take time to take care of the important stuff, as Stephen Covey would say, because of the tyranny of the urgent. So in the midst of this disruption, how do we lead in such a disruptive environment? And that's what I like to talk about, by providing transformational leadership. And I'm going to give a couple of case studies from some people that really kind of point out how this actually brings benefit to us. But before I get into that people part, I want to talk about what would be a business model of transformational leadership. So either as ourselves or if we're looking for our organizations to experience transformation, how do we want to approach this? The first thing is vision. There is a verse that says in Proverbs, where there is no vision, the people perish. If we don't have a vision of where we're going, we're not going to get there. If someone was to call you right now and say, hey, I'd like to get to Montana, how should I get there? Your first question is going to say, well, where are you? Because you cannot provide directions to Montana without knowing where you're starting. So a lot of times when people are looking at vision, they believe vision is just about the destination. When I'm working with people, I say, hey, where are you right now as a company? If you want to be a premium product, where are you right now in your offering? Are you a commodity? That's a long distance to navigate. Or are you already a premium and you just have to incrementally be able to compete with others to make sure your premium product is better than other ones? That vision, I call it where squared. You have to know where you are and then where you're going. And you, if without that, you cannot experience transformation. People is the second one. People is very multifaceted, and I'll touch on that in a little bit. One of the verses that I picked up for people, iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another, Proverbs 27:17. We have to be able to sharpen each other. And notice that that does not say, as iron sharpens butter, or as iron sharpens wood. It says, as iron sharpens iron. So the people on our leadership team, if we're looking for transformation to be able to transform an organization, to transform a culture, to transform a service offering, to transform our products, to transform how our messaging is received by our customers, who are the people that you are rubbing shoulders with? Is it iron sharpens iron, or is it iron sharpens butter? So people are in the second vital component. Number three, strategy. Strategy. If we wanted to go conquer, when I first moved to Georgia, I moved from Ohio, and I had spent some time out west, not living there, but visiting, and the first time I really saw mountains was out west, okay? So then someone had said, hey, we've got Stone Mountain here, you should go visit it. So you can imagine, you know, my disappointment when I'm comparing mountains to out west in Montana to Stone Mountain. But if we wanted to conquer Stone Mountain, we'd have a strategy. If this room, we got together and said, we are going to take Stone Mountain, would that strategy be different if we were conquering the mountains in Montana? So our strategy has to reflect the vision, and the people have to be connected with both that vision and that strategy. And the two verses that I would put with strategy, Luke, for which one of you, when he builds a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he can complete it? This is a biblical mandate that we do not just blindly go out and attempt to do something, but God gave us a brain for a purpose, and that brain is to come up with a strategy. And the next verse that you see there, Proverbs 6:9 says, the mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. So many times we can come up with a strategy, and the best of intent, it doesn't seem to work out. And I have experienced that I have had a half-baked strategy with the wrong attitude and not necessarily even approaching it the right way, but because I'm walking with the creator of the universe, it works. And people go, well, how did that happen? And they know it's not me. And then he's able to get the glory because of that. And then lastly, we have to have an action plan. We must have an action plan. It's one thing to have a great strategy with great people, with a great vision, but if we don't take that first step, it's all for naught. We have to implement the plan within our organizations or our lives. So my mother-in-law, who at 55 years old was an alcoholic most of her life, and she is, I'll tell you in a minute, but anyway, at 55, she was a binge alcoholic and destroying her life. And she said, you know what? My vision is to be able to get rid of alcoholism. The people we had an intercession with her that supported her were iron sharpens iron relationship with a strategy of going to detox, never touching alcohol again, and then having the action plan through AA and other organizations to be able to implement that. At 55, she was able to then, after detox, go get an associate's degree in counseling, then a bachelor's degree, and then one of the most prestigious universities in Ohio, Case Western Reserve. She received a full ride scholarship and then licensed and then ran centers to help chemically dependent moms. And when she tried to retire at 71 years old, they said, we will do anything for you not to retire. We will give you the entire group down the street, the entire building, if you don't retire. And she ran that for several years. Do you think she had transformational impact? All of that came out of a vision with people around her to implement a strategy, and she walked the steps of an action plan. That is transformation, and that's the same thing that can happen in our organizations. In Matthew, the example that I would give out of Matthew, which is very key to me, Jesus is giving his Sermon on the Mount. It is the most influential, comprehensive sermon that is recorded in the Bible. And at the end of it, he gives an analogy or a parable. And he gives a parable of one man building his house on a foundation of rock and one man building his house on the foundation of sand. And one man's house falls into great ruin, and the other man's house stands solid. And the only difference was, and I'll read this, the only difference was the one that hears my word and acts upon them. That was the only difference between standing strong and ruin was acting on it. So both of them heard wisdom. They heard the strategy. They heard everything, but the one that acted was the one that had the transformational impact of that home standing. So that's the end of action. Now, what we're going to do is talk about people. People has a couple of different components. Organizational behavior. When you're looking at an organization, how that organization behaves is important. The organizational behavior of Enron contributed to the transformational impact of Enron. The organizational behavior of Apple contributes to the innovation of Apple. That behavior is important. Another aspect of that people component is the team, and I like to call this something different to really nail what I'm trying to speak to, is it's the space between people. So you can have a great group of people that have great credentials, but sometimes the space between the people is not what it needs to be. We just had the NBA playoffs, and coming from Cleveland, I was rooting for Cleveland. LeBron James was in the neighborhood that we lived while we were in Cleveland. Golden State has the ability that without looking, they can pass and move that ball so much because they know each other so well that I can kind of predict where you're going to be before you even get there. You know what I'm thinking. You know what play. And that space between people wins the championship, even if you have superstars that are not as connected. So that's the second part that I'd like to just touch on. And the third part is where I really want to focus our time today. Our personal leadership is critical to how we implement a plan of transformation in our organizations and in our lives, but in our organizations. It's critical. And what does that look like? Well, let's go to the premise of today. Does transformational leadership require suffering? That's our premise that we're going to explore. Transformational leadership requires suffering. Oh, that sounds so dogmatic. Wait. I want to be a transformational leader, but that suffering component I'm not sure about. There's not a whole lot of books out there about, hey, to have transformational leadership, we must suffer. Whoa. Well, let's explore that a little bit. Let's explore that a little bit, and let's come up with a couple of case studies. So, Joseph. Joseph is a man in the Bible, and let's just use what happened to Joseph. So, if you're familiar with Joseph, at 13 years old, he started to have some dreams, all right? And he dreamed, what did he dream? Anybody? What did Joseph dream at 13 years old? He had two dreams, actually, but he dreamed what? He dreamed about his brothers, right. And his father was Jacob, who is the father of Israel. So he had 12 sons, and those are the 12 tribes of Israel. And Joseph's dream was that his father and his brothers would bow down to him. And he had two dreams. Wow, that sounds arrogant. At 13. Okay? So Joseph's a little bit arrogant, maybe a little bit sure of himself. And then do you know what happens with Joseph at 13 at this point? Anybody know what happens to Joseph at this point? Yes, he's sold into slavery. By who? His brothers. His brothers. Now, I have experienced some betrayal in life. Betrayal is painful. See, the only thing bad about betrayal, not the only thing, but the biggest thing bad about betrayal is it hurts most, not when your enemies do it, but when friends and family betray you. That is deeply painful. So Joseph is sold into slavery, transported to another country called Egypt, and there he is removed from his family, his nation, his tribe, everyone, and he is a slave in a foreign land. Do you ever feel sometimes that you're just in a foreign land? I don't know what's going on. I'm trying to run this company, and either the owners, the board, the team, they don't get it. I'm in a foreign land here. What is going on? We know we need to go this direction, but everybody is instead speaking really a different language. His native language was Hebrew. Their language was Egyptian. So to be able to be in a completely foreign country. So that's Joseph. He is there. So let's see. What else happens with Joseph? While he's in jail, Joseph was an attractive man. And Pharaoh's wife, what happened between Pharaoh's wife and Joseph? She tried to seduce him. And she falsely accused him that he was trying to sleep with her. So now you're a slave in a foreign country. Now you are falsely accused, and now you are put into prison for something you didn't do. That might qualify as suffering. Now, as he is in prison, he starts to become in charge of the prisoners. His gift and his calling, which is to interpret dreams, continues to happen. He continues to use this ability, and he interprets a dream for one of the prisoners. And then he said, hey, when you get out, make sure you tell the king that I'm in here. They get out of prison, and what do? They forget all about him. So now there's betrayal by brothers. There's betrayal by prisoners. There's this life of learning about betrayal and learning about probably forgiveness. So then after a while, the king, he starts to have some dreams, and people are wondering what's going on. And Joseph is still in jail. And the cupbearer, which was one of the prisoners who was with him, says, hey, I remember this guy in jail. And, you know, he had some ability with interpreting dreams. And he went to Pharaoh and interpret the dream in a way that Pharaoh decided, you know what? I want to entrust my entire kingdom to you. You will be greater than all men in all the land. You will be second only to Pharaoh. And in that, he rescued Egypt from 7 years of famine. During that 7 years, his family back home was in the midst of famine. They went to Egypt because of his wisdom of 7 years of prosperity and storing up grain. They went to Egypt to get grain, not knowing that he was there. His father believing he was dead to get grain. And he recognizes his siblings, and his father wasn't there at the beginning. And he saves his family. Then he brings his family to Israel, to Egypt, and then the nation of Israel was birthed from Egypt at that point when they went into the bondage that we're familiar about with Moses. Do you think Joseph suffered? Did Joseph have transformational impact on the world around him? Would he have had that transformational impact without suffering? That's the premise. That's the premise. Another example I'll give you, and I'll go through this one a little bit quicker. Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela suffered at 44 years old, at 44, after being on the run and hiding in society, he was put into prison for 28 years. So we know the impact that Nelson Mandela had. In his 8x7 cube, he had a straw mat for most of his imprisonment. That's where he is. He started to issue some writings while he was in prison and trying to get his law degree while he was in prison. They found some of his writings, which was not allowed, and they actually took away his study and writing privileges for 4 years. He did not start his transformational impact to end apartheid in South Africa. It didn't even begin until he was 72 years old. He incurred great suffering. Did he have a transformational impact? Would he have been able to do that without suffering? That's what I'll say for you. In business, so many times in business, it may not look as blatant as imprisonment. It may not look as blatant as taking you somewhere else. Very early in my career, I started off in finance, so I was an accountant. And very early in my career, my wife had just come home. She was home for about 2 years at this point. We had had our second child. There was one income. We're barely able to keep up with the bills. You know how it is. And we come to the end of the fiscal year at the company I was with, and my boss sits me down and says, we are not going to be able to make the numbers this year. Cook the books or you're fired. That's my choice. Sleep on it. Let me know your decision on Monday, Tony. Okay, iron sharpens iron. My vision has always been to be able to impact and have an impact on people, be used in a way that other people can experience transformation in their life similar to mine. Not having a job would probably interfere with that. You know, the people around me, one of the people I called, which is a very good friend and mentor, I started to say, this is just not fair. This is illegal. There weren't whistleblower laws back then. What am I going to do this? And, you know, after 20 minutes of, in his words, whining and complaining, he said, Tony, you know what you're going to do. Just go to sleep, get up, and go in and tell him. Is that suffering, the turmoil, to be able to say, support your family or lie? Well, I went back. I obviously did not cook the books. But let me tell you, that was not the first time. After that, that event happened several times. One specific organization, I was asked to present in front of the organization that we were running that people are our most valuable resource. People are most important. And behind the scenes, the choice was that we need to not give our employees any raises. This was going on 3 years. And we needed to increase the healthcare cost at the same time that they're not getting raises, and their net pay went down for, this was the third consecutive year that their net pay had declined. Well, that's extremely inconsistent and I think lacks integrity with who you say is your most important resource, which is people. So that integrity was tested. And through life, there's been other tests all the way through in the business world. When we incur these times of wilderness, these times of decisions, Are we going to be able to make the decision in the small moments so it will prepare us for the larger moments so that we can then have the platform to be able to exhibit transformational leadership and then transform our organizations? So, going back to the premise, transformation, does it require suffering? Does it require suffering? I was talking one time, and this group was actually a group of Kenyans. So the majority of the audience were from the country of Kenya. And one particular person raised their hand and challenged the premise and said, I don't believe that suffering is required for great leadership. I said, you don't? Then no. I said, well, you know, your country is known for producing amazing runners. You guys just produce amazing runners. Just fascinated at how you're able to have such people of performance. I said, you know, I really don't want to suffer with training. I just want to be a great runner. Can you help me out with that? Because I think it's unfair that you would expect me to go through this discipline training that you have. I just want to be able to be known as a great runner. I aspire to that and could be able to have a platform to help other people. You know, their response is just like yours. It doesn't work that way. So then I said to this person, I said, well, what you're saying is I have to suffer the training in order to be a great runner. And it's required. That was the end of the conversation. So when we're looking at this, we're looking at championship runners and marathon runners. They have to be able to suffer the endurance of training and suffering in order to be the great runners that we see. After the end of all the transformation, what does Joseph say? Because he went through a lot. I mean, we just abbreviated everything in a few minutes. But what was his outcome when he finally was able to meet his brothers that betrayed him? Finally able to open up and let them know who he is. This is what he said. You intended harm to me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. He saved the lives of Israel from the famine, Egypt from the famine, and everybody in that circle of influence that came to Egypt to be able to get their provisions during those 7 years. That's what his goal, purpose, and life was about, to transform a culture, an environment, a world power, and he had to go through suffering to do it. Nelson Mandela, he was asked, after prison, it took 3 years after he was out of prison to be able to negotiate the laws that changed and did away with apartheid. And they asked him a couple questions, and here's some of his answers. Difficulties break some men, but make others. He didn't seem to harbor any bitterness about it. He forgave the very people that imprisoned him. Suffering. If I had my time to do over, I would do the same thing again. So would any man or woman who dares call himself a man. That's commitment. And without that commitment, we can't go through suffering. That is commitment. Another person that had a transformational impact on at least our society, Martin Luther King was stabbed. He was beaten. He was jailed multiple times. He suffered from depression. When his grandmother passed, he was depressed about it, actually believing it was his fault. He actually jumped off the second story of a building to commit suicide, unsuccessful. He suffered. And what did he say? Not only in his I Have a Dream speech, but other places. I have lived these last few years with the conviction that unearned suffering is redemptive. In your organizations, unearned suffering is redemptive. If you want to change the environment, the culture, where you're going, the position of your organization, suffering will redeem you from where you are to be able to get to where you want to be. That's what's required in order to have transformation. So now let's look at a couple other things. One time I was asking, and this was a group that was at a church, and they said, I still just don't believe that suffering is a part of creation. That's just not the way God designed the universe, that suffering is a requirement. I said, really? I said, well, do you realize that your place in heaven and eternity required suffering of God himself on a rugged cross? So if it's a requirement for him to transform your life from death to life, why are we believing it wouldn't be a requirement for us to transform our circle of influence? So let's look at a couple of things that this suffering, so many times it can be a very sad, you know, that you're like, Tony, wow, this is a really uplifting conversation that we're having here. So why do we want to do this? What does it look like? In James, it says, consider it all joy, my brethren. Joy? Joy? When you encounter various trials, knowing, here's the reason, the testing of your faith produces endurance. In order to have impact, in order to have endurance to run a marathon, in order to have endurance to be able to have integrity in a difficult situation, in order to have endurance to go through suffering and to have that transformational impact, we can consider it a joy that we are worthy of suffering to be able to have that impact on our organizations. But we rejoice in our sufferings. Wow, rejoice at sufferings? Why? Knowing that suffering produces endurance, endurance character, and character produces hope. If we want character in our organizations, that this organization stands for X, you can't just make that statement and put it on a wall without living it out. And sometimes in the living it out, you know, our character is not truly, truly truly, truly validated until it is tested. That's when you know the character of a person and the character of an organization, when someone says, let's cheat, and the organization says, no, that's not us. So if we want that character, if we want that hope for our employees that our organization is going somewhere, I would submit to you that it is going to require suffering. So to be an agent of change, to be an agent of suffering, to be able to have the influence that we want to have, what must we do? And I picked up one of the cards that's on your table. You know, it says for this organization, for Johnson's Ferry Baptist CEOs, the purpose is encouraging CEOs to utilize their influence for Jesus Christ. That influence, in my mind, requires that we have to endure some things in order to have the joy of having that influence on others and to be used to help transform others in our families, in our country, in our nations, and in our companies. So, first, recognize, have a plan for transformation. We can't just wish that we transform things. You know, I presented the four-step plan of the vision, people, strategy, and action. You know, my vision was to get out of poverty. It was pretty simple. So I hung around people that could help me accomplish that, had a strategy of going to school and then be able to apply myself to grades and be able to get to the point that I can have the action step of executing on that plan. My mother-in-law had the ability to be able to execute that. Organizations I've worked with, how do we move from a commodity to a premium service offering? There is a plan to be able to transform what we're about. Recognize that suffering is part of the training program, ladies, gentlemen. It's just part of the program. You know, we can try to shortcut to be that runner without it, but part of the program is that we have to endure through the trials to be able to have that transformational impact and be an agent of change. Perfection is not required. Now, was Nelson Mandela perfect? Was Joseph perfect? Any of us in here perfect? But all those folks that have this incredible transformational impact on their world, their nation, Martin Luther King perfect? Perfection is not required, so don't put that on yourself. It's not required. Don't give up. Right around 65 years old, I might have said, you know, this prison thing isn't working. I don't know if this apartheid thing is really worth it. You know, after being stabbed or jailed, after the 10th time of being jailed, I don't know if I would have said this civil rights in America is worth it. Abraham Lincoln suffering through health issues and everything else to be able to say pulling this country back together in a union is not worth it. Being able to stick it out is part of the requirement to have transformational impact on your organizations. Tough times come, customers leave. We had one specific company. We had just done all of our values and our rebranding, and one of the values was stewardship and the other was integrity. And a customer was asking us to lie to a government regulator, the regulatory department over our specific industry, and to lie about something that we were producing. I said, we can't do that. We have to walk from this deal. We have to. This is testing our character as an organization. We walked from that deal. They left. They fired us. We had already had their product in-house, and it would go through a certain phase, and then it would go into commercial production. And before it got to commercial production, they fired us and took it somewhere else. I said, when they leave and they take their stuff, our entire team, I said, this needs to be the best exit of a relationship that they have ever seen in their life, because that's who we are. That's our character. And we did that. They could not believe how, quote, nice we were as they fired us and took their stuff with them. A year later, after they could not have their product produced, what did they do? They had to come back. Would they have come back if we wouldn't have had that stance? I don't think so. You know, the world would say, start to tell them what you really think about them. But that's not it. So don't give up, and make sure you stick to your plan and your values. Embrace suffering as a tool. Suffering is not there just to put, it's not a warm and fuzzy tray that's just kind of, to put a damper on the day. It is a tool. It is a real tool to really have impact on a real person, to transform us first so that we can then go out and transform others. When Moses first, there's a lot of conversation about being able to have a purpose in life. When Moses first identified his purpose, and he was actually born a Hebrew instead of an Egyptian, he knew his purpose. He absolutely knew it. It was to liberate his people. He knew his purpose. And he decided to take charge, because he was a take charge guy, educated in the best schools in the world, over the best country in the world, in the best political position in the world. And he decided to take charge and went out and killed an Egyptian. God said, hey, Moses, I'm going to institute a training program for you. You're going to go herd sheep for 40 years in the wilderness. Herding sheep for 40 years in the land of Midian in the wilderness, did that qualify him for herding anything else for 40 years in the wilderness? I'm just telling you, sometimes God knows what he's doing, all right? But when he came back and God called him and said, now you're ready, he was not nearly as arrogant as he was before. Humility, I think, was one of the many lessons that Moses learned during his 40 years of extended training. So as that tool, sometimes suffering is fashioning us and building those character traits. It may be humility. It may be confidence. It may be the ability to stand in integrity. Whatever it is, that's the blessing of suffering. And once that takes hold in you, you can then go to Pharaoh and say, let my people go with confidence, because you've gone through the suffering of that training program, that time in the wilderness, that time in jail for Joseph, that time in jail for Mandela. Suffering is your legacy. If you're not willing to personally be transformed by suffering, my premise is you cannot have a transformational impact on your companies, your families, your community, or even this nation. It is a requirement to tool you and fashion you and transform you, as Romans would say, so that you can be used to transform your organizations and the community and your circle of influence. Suffering is a requirement. Thank you.